We've been waiting for this day for a long period of time. We've been visiting with the Randazzo family for a long period, and it's a great privilege to be here to introduce them to our community. And I know this is only a small sampling of our community, but it's just awesome. And I'm just going to read you Rick's short bio, then we're going to introduce you to his family. And we've got a little video, and then Rick will share. Rick Randazzo is currently the executive director of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes hockey program after launching the hockey arm of the ministry in 2008. Rick and his family have taken that arm from virtually nothing, a blimp on the radar, to the second most active FCA sport in the country. I believe lacrosse is number one. So amazing, amazing work. He and his family have just relocated in Alexandria after completing a five-year mission trip in which they and another family spent 30 days in all 50 states to help establish the FCA hockey and share the love of Jesus Christ with hockey coaches, players, and families. Rick received his master's degree in business administration in 1999 before leaving the Army for corporate America and to coach college hockey. For the next 8 years, he was the head coach, handling the head coaching duties at the U.S. Naval Academy hockey team. Rick also had the opportunity to coach for Team USA during the World University Games in Innsbruck, Austria in 2005. I'm going to take this time to introduce Rick's family right now. We'll just have them stand up one by one if we would. Rick, you want to stand first? And Shannon is his wife. Just hold the applause if you would. And next is Aaron, that good-looking guy. Allie is 13. Aaron is 15. Shannon said, you cannot share my age. Addison is 11. And Anderson is 5. Please help me to welcome. Their other son, Alec, is in Utah, and he is starting the next phase of his life, which is exciting. So I don't know. I've been thinking about this introduction for a long time because Kath and I have known very few people in our lives that have committed their life to Jesus Christ and his walk, where they've actually given up 5 years of a seemingly, as the world would know, a successful career and a successful endeavor. And they've given it all up, and they followed the word. I think I think the Bible verse was Isaiah 6:8. Who can I trust, and who will go for me? And so we're just so excited that they have answered and they've been obedient, and God has placed them here. And I just can't tell you how pleased we are as a Christian hockey community to have the Randazzos here. I can't introduce Rick. I have to turn on this video first. Then he's going to take over. So thank you for being here today.
All right. This one? We're good.
Our Tar Heel Traveler has a sports theme this week, and tonight he hits the ice.
Scott Mason profiles a hockey family from Raleigh dedicated to growing the game and spreading their faith.
Okay, guys, is everybody ready?
It's a long drive, 50 cities in 50 states in 5 years, in a van with 5 kids.
You know, how do you do it? And my answer usually is, we haven't figured that out yet.
They're a family from Raleigh, a hockey family.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
So it's really fun.
And we've impacted lives. I think that's been the big thing that we've been able to do.
They've impacted lives through the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and FCA Hockey.
There's hockey in all 50 states. We know that. Our idea is to go in and try to start Christian hockey leagues in all 50 states.
And so they are traveling to all 50 states. Mom, dad, kids, him too.
He's number 5, and we're blessed that he goes with the flow.
The house is on the market, and the mission has begun.
The first 8 months, we've already put 25,000 miles on the van.
Coolest places I've been on the trip was New Hampshire and Vermont, because in New Hampshire, we were a block away from the beach.
And we got to eat some good lobster in Maine, which was awesome.
Awesome, too, are the people they've met.
As we set out to be a gift to them, they've been more of a gift to us.
Our mission is to impact the hockey world. Everyone challenging them not only to be better hockey players, but also to be better people.
It's fun because you can play hockey and learn about God at the same time.
The goal is to have FCA hockey in all 50 states.
They're spending 1 month in each state, staying wherever they can.
One state we ended up moving 8 times in 2 weeks.
The kids are homeschooled.
I love being on the ice.
But do you like being in the van?
Kinda.
It has been difficult in many ways, but yet rewarding in unbelievable ways.
And that's why they push on.
We look to do Alaska in the van.
It's a long journey.
It's just living daily.
And being thankful for the blessings along the way.
Serve others. I hope that'll be ingrained in him from the very beginning.
Bless you.
And the kids are so thrilled with it. That's amazing. You can follow the family's travels at FCAHockey.com.
Wow. Am I on back there? Awesome. I don't have a problem speaking loud, so you should be able to hear me. I look at that video that was filmed in 2011, and now I look at our children here and ourselves and just have to praise the Lord for the awesomeness that he has shown to our family. So I'm going to talk for the next 20 to 30 minutes and hopefully leave everyone with a little challenge, that we've learned on this tour. And when you walk out of here, maybe there'll be something stewing in your heart and in your mind that the Lord has placed on our heart. But before I get going on that, I'd like to ask a couple of questions that you might be thinking right now about our family, and then I'm going to answer those for you during my talk here. So a lot of times people say, how does a guy from Buffalo, New York, and my wife from Buffalo, New York, end up here in Alexandria, Minnesota? Many of you have grown up here. Brent and Mark Jensen and some of my good friends, and have stayed here. But how does a guy from Buffalo end up here in Alexandria? Secondly, how does a guy, and Tim didn't mention this, but I played hockey at West Point. How does a guy from West Point end up coaching at the United States Naval Academy? That's a really, really, really big one that people still ask me today when they read my bio, right? So we'll talk about that for a minute or two. Is it true that myself and my wife and our 5 kids traveled the entire country and spent time in all 50 states traveling in that van? That's a question that people ask us all the time. And if so, how did you do it? How'd you do that? Now, we'll talk a little bit about those challenges, kind of how that happened here as well. And then how did you come up with this idea? Who would have ever thought about this? Is this normal for FCA people? You know, where did this idea come from? And Tim mentioned our life verse or our tour verse, Isaiah 6:8, but how did that come about? How did that really happen? And how did you know to do it? And then lastly, and this is kind of a funny question, I think, after traveling for 5 years, after moving 40-some times, are you still married? Right? Are you still married? And how are your kids doing? Well, obviously, I'm still married. My wife is over here. We've been close. She left one month on the tour. She packed up a couple of little guys and headed back to North Carolina, but she always came back. So that's a good sign. And we're here. It couldn't have been a better time for us to finally put down some roots here in Alexandria. So we're pretty excited to be here. So now that I've asked a couple questions that you might be thinking. I'm going to start to answer those. But before I do that, I want to ask you a couple of questions about yourself. Okay? So everybody has a little card on their desk or on their table or on their chair. So it's just a blank card. And we're going to write something down. So if you have a pen, I'd love for you to pull a pen out or grab one off the table. So this is the thinking part for everybody here. But the first question, you don't have to write this down yet, but we can get ready. The first question I'm going to ask you is, being a Christian man or woman, do you believe that you are called to do something extraordinary for the Lord? Do you believe that? And you can answer that to yourself, yes or no. I've been called, or maybe some people feel like I really haven't been called for anything to serve him. I haven't been called yet. So that's the first question I want you to start thinking about here. Secondly, do you believe that the Lord speaks to us individually? Do you believe that? I remember having a conversation with Mr. Brent over here. How do you know when the Lord speaks to you? How do you know? So that's a question I'd love to talk to you about, and I'll share a little bit about my experiences dealing with the Lord speaking. Thirdly, do you believe that the Lord prefers or demands our obedience? Tim mentioned that when he introduced me, that being obedient to the Lord, it's a decision. Do you believe that he demands our obedience? So I'm going to open up my Bible here to 1 Samuel. I'm going to try to do something with this microphone first here. Okay. Can you hear me back there? If I speak loudly? Okay, great. I think we're okay. I'm going to open up to the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 15. Thank you. And in this book, and in this specifically this chapter, the prophet Samuel goes to King Saul. And King Saul was the king right before David, and he was a really tall king, really great posture. Started out really well, but started swaying towards the end of his walk here, starting to think that all of the power that he had was not from the Lord, but came from himself. So Samuel comes up to him and says, now in verse 3, chapter 15, verse 3, now go and attack the Amalekites and utterly destroy all that they have and do not spare any of them. Kill both man and woman, infant and child, sheep, oxen, every animal that exists, kill everything. Those are some pretty serious, you know, demands that Samuel, the prophet, gave to Saul. Basically, go into that town and wipe everyone out. And then come back, basically. So if you know the story here, Saul goes in, they have a victory, but he doesn't obey. He doesn't obey. He sacrificed, he went out and he did what was asked, but didn't follow completely what the instructions were from the Lord. So I'm going to move to verse 8. It says, he took the king alive. So the first thing he did was he basically took the king, basically, and said, you're coming with us. And then he took the best of the sheep, the best of the oxen, the best of everything that existed in this city, didn't destroy it, and took it with him. All right? So right there, he's being disobedient to what the Lord has called him to do through the prophet Samuel. Jumping forward again here, Samuel approaches him and says, what are you doing? And at that point, Saul says, well, we're going to have a sacrifice. We're going to burn, we're going to kill, we're going to offer the blood sacrifice to the Lord and to honor him for this victory. And Samuel says this, and I'd like you to write this down on your card, please, on the front side of the card. 1 Samuel 15:22b. So it's 1 Samuel 15:22b.
To obey is better than to sacrifice. To obey is better than to sacrifice. These past 5 years on the tour, my family and I have given up much to follow the Lord. This is the one lesson, I believe, one of many, that has impacted us the most. The Lord requires and demands our obedience over our sacrifice. Thank you. Awesome. So we're going to talk about that right now through our story. I hope to be able to share with you how the Lord has asked us to be obedient to Him and demanded us to be obedient to Him, even when we didn't want to be that obedient, even when we wanted to go here when He called us here, even though we wanted comfort over what He wanted for us. Okay, so I'm going to back up and start a little bit with my story, and then I'm going to pick up the FCA hockey journey as we go. So I grew up, as I said, in Buffalo, New York, and hockey was my life. I'm the middle child of three boys, and for me, it was always about trying harder. I can always outwork somebody, and that was the lesson that my parents passed on to me. And I don't know, I would bet in a room this size, there are several people that had that same philosophy or have that same philosophy. It's about how hard I work. If I make one more sales call or two more sales calls or if I do this more, if I outwork people, I'm gonna get ahead. And it's always going to work out for me. And that was my mentality. Whether it was in school or in sports or in anything that I did later on in life when I went into sales and some of those things, that was my mentality. How hard I work was directly reflective upon how successful I was. So that was my mentality, and I was a pretty good hockey player. When I was in high school, I had a chance to captain two teams to win national championships, and one team that I was on, we were 40-0. We didn't lose a game the whole season, and we won the national championship. And I was heavily recruited by Division I colleges across the country. And I chose to go to West Point, mainly because most of the people I knew didn't think I could make it through West Point. Didn't think I had a chance. Really didn't think I would last a week. And there were bets from people saying he'll be back in a week or he'll be back in a day or he'll be back after a month. And I didn't know what West Point was. They came to a practice I was at and said, we want to fly you in next weekend and to see West Point. And that started my journey. And I went to West Point and said, This is kind of different. I never even thought about this, but it gives me an opportunity to continue to play hockey in college, which was a goal of mine. And if people say I can't do it, I'm going to show them that I can. I'm going to work harder and just make this thing happen with what's inside of me. I can do this. So I went to West Point, and in the history of West Point, if they had a list of the worst... Anyone know what they call freshmen at West Point? Plebes. In the history of West Point, if they had a picture, when you get to West Point, they give you this little book and you have to memorize the book. And it has the second verse of the Star-Spangled Banner. I didn't even know there was a second verse in the Star-Spangled Banner. So I had to memorize that. And I had to memorize this and memorize all of this stuff. And I am still to this day probably one of the worst memorization people there is. So that book that we got was called Bugle Notes. And if they had a picture of the worst plebe in West Point history there, my picture would be right there. The worst ever. The first day I remember putting my robe on and walking out to go to the bathroom just like I was at a regular university. And from that second on, my life was... I had no clue what I was getting myself into from that second on. And it was a tough year, the freshman, the plebe year for me, even being a hockey player. Well, academically was another story. I had Division I schools say, if you break this score on your SAT, we'll bring you to our school. And that wasn't another strength of mine, memorization and SATs. Those were two of the worst. So I ended up at West Point with valedictorians and guys that led their classes. And I think they scored higher on their SAT in one section than I did on mine combined. And it was just a tough environment. So I had to learn how to study. And I had to study every day and every night, which included Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday, every day for 4 years in the library. During that time, I started going to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And when I grew up, I would say, in a Christian home. My parents are good Christians. We went to church. I went to a Catholic high school. I was a two-time all-Catholic, Tim. Okay? Two-time all, first-team all-Catholic. And, you know, I went to the classes. I went to the classes. But I really had never known what it meant to follow Jesus Christ or to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. Nobody pulled me aside and said, I want to teach you what it means to follow Jesus Christ. So when I got to West Point, I started getting involved with FCA. And mainly, truthfully, because it got me out of some things. I could go there and have breakfast and not get yelled at. Or I could go there and people would encourage me. And plebe or West Point, there's a lot of people yelling at you. So this was a safe place for me. And over the course of those 4 years, I started a Bible study with the hockey team that is still going on today. I grew closer in my walk with Jesus personally, but nobody challenged me to have a personal relationship one-on-one and disciple me. So I really didn't know what it meant. Hockey-wise, my career was great. I finished as one of the all-time leading scorers at West Point. I led the team as a freshman in goals. We were sixth in the country that year for a good part of the season. And hockey-wise, things were going great. But there was something missing in my life. And I just didn't know what that was at the time. I didn't know what that was. When I graduated West Point, I went back to Buffalo, New York. And I was out with some friends, and across the bar, I hate to say that, I saw my wife. Now, my wife and I had dated for about 3 weeks in high school, or a month or so. And then I hadn't seen her for 6 years. So then here we were, five years later, I saw her again, and I beelined right for her. And I asked her out, and we caught up, and 2 years later, we were married. My Army career started. I was able to go through Army Ranger School, which to this point in my life made West Point look easy, going through Army Ranger School. I went to Airborne School, and then I was blessed to go out to California to what some say was the hardest assignment for any Army officer, which was training at the National Training Center in Fort Irwin, California. And this was an incredible 3 years for myself and my wife. We didn't have kids. We got to travel. But it was 2 weeks a month, every month. We were in the Mojave Desert, degrees, 120 degrees or so, just training and training and training our military. And it was an incredible opportunity to learn how to be a warfighter. And I was blessed to be the scout platoon leader there for almost 2 years, which was the hardest job, reporting right to the colonel or to the general. And it was an awesome opportunity for my military career. After that, I had a chance to go teach ROTC and get my master's degree. And while we were there, our life changed. We had one child, my oldest son, Alex, who's turning 19 in a couple of weeks, was born, and we moved to Edwardsville, Illinois. And I was walking Alex in the stroller, and I walked into a store in a little downtown, similar to what we have here in Alexandria. And and a woman invited us to go to church. And my wife and I went to this small little community church that was meeting at the high at the middle school. And at that point, both my wife and I found out what it meant to be discipled by Christian men and women. We were both then baptized, and immediately thereafter, we sold a car. I think it was our first step out into obedience. We sold a car, and I would ride my bike to work so we could do what the Lord asked us to do, which was to tithe 10% of our income. She was home with my son, Alex, at the time, and I was working and doing school, and the Lord got a hold of our heart. And through men and women, Christian men and women, we found out, somebody challenged us and said, this is what it looks like to follow Jesus Christ. That was the first step. At this point, I thought we were going to spend a career in the military. I ended up traveling to Annapolis, Maryland to visit a high school friend. Had never been there. Army's a Division I hockey program and Air Force is, but the Naval Academy had a club team that I never knew about. A club hockey team that competed, and I'm walking around the Naval Academy, and for the first time in my life, I walk up these steps. The first building I walk into, I open up some doors and I walk out. There's a beautiful ice rink right in front of me in the middle of the Naval Academy. Right in the middle of the Naval Academy. It was magnificent. It was a building from 1808 or 09. They used to hold graduation there. They made it into their ice rink, and it was just magnificent. And I heard the Lord tell me, Rick, this is where I want you to be. This is where I want you to be. So he spoke in my head through the Holy Spirit to me and telling me. So one of the questions I asked you was, do you believe the Lord speaks to us? And I would tell you yes. This was the first time in my life, right in my mind, and I called my wife and said, you're not going to believe this. We're probably not going to go to Fort Carson, Colorado, which was our follow-up assignment from teaching ROTC. The Lord has called me or called us to coach at the Naval Academy. And she said, you don't even have any skates, right? I didn't have any skates at this time. So, and she said, do you know anyone there? How are you going to do this? Do they have a coach? Do they have a team? I said, I don't know. I don't know any of those answers, but I can buy some skates. And if the Lord has called me here, he's going to give me the head coaching. He's going to give me the coaching job. So over the next couple of months, I made some calls. I started this ball moving, right? They tried everything to block a West Pointer from coaching at the Naval Academy, right? Everything. Right? They tried it, but I knew the Lord had called me to it. And 4 months later, 5 months later, I was a head coach at the Naval Academy, having never coached a game. And I think I was 26 years old and walking into this program with my own rank and my own team and everything else. And it was pretty incredible. Now, it was hard. I had to find another job because the one thing I didn't tell you was, they told me they were going to pay me $1,000 a year. That's one of the things they tried to do. You can, finally, we'll give you the job, but your pay's $1,000, right? And practice is every day. So you had to go find a job. So I was able to find a job with Xerox in Washington, D.C., selling big copy machines. My brother had been at Xerox, and selling these big copy machines. And I would leave the house at 4:30 in the morning to beat the traffic to get to D.C., to put in a full day. I remember the Lord sold a $1 million copy machine before I had even went through training to turn the machine on. I did a cold call in D.C., and the guy ended up buying one or two or three of these $1 million machines. It was pretty unbelievable how that month we were thousands of dollars short a month to meet our requirements. unless I sold something. And from day one, the Lord honored that, and we sold, was able to sell things. But I started coaching and just really making that commitment. My wife was home. We had a second child. We had a third child. Things were going well at the Naval Academy. Things were tough at home because I'd worked one job. I'd worked the second job. Then I'd travel on weekends. So it was really difficult for Shannon. The blessing for us was my wife got tied into BSF. And I know Bible Study Fellowship is here, and some of the ladies go to BSF. So I think she was tied in with a group of believers that was able to disciple her. I tied in with an accountability group that I was able to be discipled and built up. And together we found a great church, and we grew that way. So we are growing as we were serving the Lord together. They started to raise my pay, and I gave that to my assistant coaches because the Lord was blessing us in other ways. And today, the Naval Academy coach, I think, makes $18,000, which is better than one. Right. So the Lord called, and then he provided for us. He opened up all those doors and provided everything we needed. I'm going to jump forward. At the eight-year mark, the athletic director called me in his office and said, Rick, we're not going to promote the club hockey team to varsity. I had worked with the NCAA. We had gotten the Frozen Four to Washington, did some work with the Washington Capitals, petitioned the Frozen Four committee to bring us, to allow us to have the Frozen Four tournament in D.C., which would bring in X amount of money. We raised $8 million to build a new rink, and we built a new rink. And all of these things aligned for Navy to become a Division I sport. And then the athletic director said, no, it's not going to happen. And at that point, I said, okay, that's okay. We're going to step down. And my wife and I started praying. Where do we want to move to? She started praying herself, and I started praying. And then we came together after a little bit of time, and we said, 1, 2, 3. And we both said our cities, and we both said Raleigh, North Carolina. And we didn't know anyone in Raleigh. So we ended up moving to Raleigh, North Carolina. And I got to speed up a little bit here just to kind of get through this. But we're in Raleigh, North Carolina. We ended up getting an apartment and trying to figure out where we wanted to live. And we're on this roller coaster ride. And I said, okay, Lord, how can you use me? The first question I asked was, do you believe the Lord has something extraordinary for you? Do you believe that? And I started praying, and I did this, I said this prayer, and my wife started praying for at least 6 months because I journaled it. And I said, Lord, how can you use me? Do you want us to be foreign missionaries? We'll go wherever you want, but you know the true intentions of my heart. You had me coach. You had me play hockey at a high level. I want to use the talents you've given me to honor you. So I remember it as if it was yesterday. I was tired of waiting, and I was going to walk up to the pastor at the church we were going to and volunteer to start a sports ministry. And from here to where Pastor Jay is sitting, I saw him, and for the second time, the Lord said, wait on me. I was walking to him to say, Pastor Jay, I want to start a sports ministry at church. Can we meet tomorrow in your office? And the Lord said, wait on me. And I knew the first time it worked out pretty well for me. When I listened to what the Lord said. So I said, okay. The next day my phone rang. Somebody in Kansas City, Missouri, the home of FCA corporate headquarters. And he said, Rick, I got your name from somebody. We'd love to fly you out to Kansas City to start FCA hockey. We don't have any money. We don't have a logo. You know, I said, hey, all you got to come up with is more than $1,000 and we're good. So if you can do that, totally going to work for us. So I flew out to Kansas City, met with him, and we launched, my wife and I launched FCA hockey shortly thereafter. Right? And I waited on the Lord, waited for him to direct us, and asked him. Right? So when we're waiting on the Lord, he wants us to ask him, what do you have for me, Lord? I want to submit, and I want to be obedient. But it takes our asking him. And then listening. If I wouldn't have listened, I would have been doing something else at a different church and may have missed that whole thing entirely. So FCA started. And at this point, I would fly out. My oldest son, Alex, would fly with me, and we would do a camp in Fargo. Or then we'd fly to Boston and do a camp there, or Chicago. And at this point, I received a call from Mark Jensen, who's not here today. But I got a call from Mark. He saw something online or something, I think maybe in the FCA magazine. Said, hey, I want to be involved in FCA hockey. It was right around the time we launched, 2008. And we ended up doing a camp in Fargo, flying in and out of Minneapolis. So we met Mark on our drive through. And it was at that particular time, I called Shannon on the way home, on the way back to the airport, said, there's something special about this community. I just met Mark. And I think maybe Judd Dunick drove in from Wilmer for this little meeting at Mark's house. And I don't know if, Jay, you were there, but you may have been there, right? Praise Jesus. So that, I told Shannon something special, not knowing we'd be moving here, 8 years later. And that just planted a seed. So we started doing these camps and these clinics. And then I got a call from the CEO and president of FCA, Les Steckel, that said, Rick, we've heard about the things you've done. I've spent some time with you in Florida at the coaches' convention. I'd love to have you interview. We're doing a realignment interview for one of our vice president jobs. And we're realigning the whole country. And I want you to be one of our key 12 leaders. And I said, wow, Les, I don't even know what to say. I haven't even built FCA the way I think the Lord wants me to build it. So I'm really not interested. And he said, well, just promise me this. You'll pray about it, and then we'll talk about it in a couple, go through the process. And I said, okay, I'll do that. So I go, there was a four-month process through this interview process, and each step of the way I'm praying, and the Lord is telling me, it's not for you. It's not for you. But I have the president, and there's some presidents in here that can be pretty persuasive, keeps calling, saying, I want you to have this job. I want you to be one of these guys. So it was December 23rd, Les called me and said, Rick, have you changed your mind? Because you made the final cut. We're down to 16 and 12 guys are getting it. So I'm like, oh my goodness. And the Lord hasn't changed my mind, Les, but I'll keep praying. And on December 26th, I got up in my quiet time, opened my Bible. I said, Lord, I really need to hear from you today. And I went to Isaiah 6:8, or he brought me to Isaiah 6:8. Who will go for me? Here I am, Lord, send me. And that verse, at that particular time, allowed me to say, Les, I'm all in. If you want me to go to Washington State or somewhere else and lead FCA, which I wouldn't be doing any hockey things, I'll go do it. I'll be obedient to your call. I'll be obedient, Lord. And I told Shannon, and she, of course, we prayed, we studied the verse, and we called Les and said, okay, we're in. We'll be there for the final interview. I went to the final interview. It was about a two-hour or three-hour ordeal. You had to brief a strategic plan. And the number two guy said, that's the best strategic plan we've ever heard. And then Les walked me out after my presentation and said, quote, tell Shannon to get the house ready to sell. Tell Shannon to get the house ready to sell. And you know what happened? What do you think happened, Tom?
They never called back.
They never called. I don't know if you heard that story before, but that was good. All right. They never called. And I didn't get the job. And the number two guy called and said, about 2 weeks later, and said, thank you for applying. We'd love for you to stay on FCA, on our team, and keep doing what you're doing. And I was amazed. I was disappointed. I was upset. I was mad. All of those things. Lord, I'm being obedient. And now, I didn't even want this job. And now, when you don't get something you really didn't want, you're upset. Right? You're like, what? What? But I was upset. And I think I cried. I wept. But what did the Lord then do? A couple of nights later, the Lord woke my wife up around 5 a.m. She pulled out a piece of paper, actually two or three, and she wrote out the 50-state, 50-city vision, starting with, we're going to sell our house. We're going to sell our cars. We're going to start in August 2011 in Maine. I didn't want to start in Maine. I wanted to start in a place where there were Christians. You know, you hear about in Maine, there's really no Christians up there, right? There were, but that's what I was thinking, right? Again, trying to control it myself. But we're going to start in August 2011 and finish way down here in December in 2015. At the time, we had four kids. Right? So this little guy here was 2 months when we rolled out to Maine in August. And each month, we had to find housing. And we had to find, obviously, a place to live. Where are we going to live? Seven of us calling people and saying, will you house us? We had to find ice time, right? We had to do all this work. Then after we found ice time, after we found housing, we had to get kids to the clinic, right? That was a huge pressure. Sometimes we'd have three, and sometimes we had 70, right? But the Lord gave this vision to Shannon in the middle of the morning, telling her to sell everything and to go. And that was what he was telling me through Isaiah 6:8. Not to go to Washington where I could serve him, not really with all my heart, but I was willing to do it. So the Lord knows the true intentions of our heart, his word tells us. And when we become obedient to him, he'll give us those intentions. So we started traveling, and it was Maine, and it was hard, and we didn't know really what we were doing. I rented a house on Craigslist. Anybody use Craigslist? It's good for like a lawnmower or, you know, a used TV or something like that. It's not good to rent a house on Craigslist, especially if there's no pictures. Right? So we pulled into this house in Maine, and Addison was five or six at the time. And it was a house almost on stilts. He opened up this window, and the whole window fell out the second story. Right? Praise Jesus, he didn't fall out. Because obviously he would have been dead, the tour would have been over, and I would have been single. That was huge. Then every night when Shannon had to get up to breastfeed, it said on Craigslist, lightly furnished. There was a king mattress on the floor stained. That was our bed, right? There was a broken table or a table with a couple of broken chairs, and I think that was about it. And dog hair everywhere. That was maybe the carpet or something. But it said lightly furnished, and that's what we walked into. Shannon would get up to feed the little guy. And I had to check their beds for spiders because they were giant, bigger than our mosquitoes, if you can believe that here. So that was how we started the tour. And it didn't get any better because the next month we drove right into a tornado or hurricane that was coming up the coast. And we tried to move out of the way to dodge it, and it moved to get us. And we ended up moving eight times that month, and I think that was on the video, and that's when Shannon packed up and left. During that time, I got a call from a man I didn't even know. I didn't even know how he got my number, but he called him and said, Rick, this is Tom Brown. I got your name from somebody. How can I serve you today? How can I serve you today? And I said, wow, we're here to serve you guys, but it's hard for us to serve because we don't even know where we're sleeping. We went to a church, and the church put us in their missionary house, and there was no water to shower or bathe our kids. I called the maintenance team, and they said, well, just take the faucet apart. I said, I'm a hockey coach. I can't do any of that stuff. Tim can, but I can't. And they just basically left us there, and it was really, really hard. And in the midst of that, this man, Tom, told us it was about serving. It was about serving others. And I said, oh, we're good. The next day, my phone rings, 9 o'clock. Hey, how can I serve you? How about I take the boys to lunch? And I don't know if Aaron remembers it, but he'd take them to seafood feasts and lunch and all, you know, and take us skating and do all this amazing stuff. Didn't even know the guy. Truly, it was a huge blessing to us. But the tour continued. There were times when we were moving on a Saturday and we didn't have a place to live. I remember walking out of the rink. I ran a clinic on a Thursday night in Indian, Carmel, Indiana, and walked out, had a voicemail. We were moving on Saturday. We're moving to Kentucky, and we didn't have a place to live. My wife kept saying, where are we living this month? Where are we going next month? Where are we going? We have an address. I was like, don't know. Walked out Thursday night. A woman on the phone, voicemail, said, Rick, we have a spot for you for this next month. Tuesday in my quiet time, the Lord told me to prepare our guest house for you. And then I heard about your need today. So she had already prepared for us before she even knew we were coming. How awesome. When you're obedient, when you take that step of obedience, the Lord goes before you. I could talk for the next 30 minutes alone on just 50 state, 50 city, the ways the Lord blessed us. Alaska. Somebody says, we're at a dinner party on a Friday night. Didn't even know this guy. He kind of lived next door to where we were staying. Said, how you getting to Alaska? I said, well, we're going to drive. Seven of us are going to drive. It's going to take us 3 or 4 days pulling our trailer. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you know our van. And he said, no, you're not. I said, yeah, we're going to drive. He said, no, I'm going to buy you plane tickets. And within 24 hours, we had 7 plane tickets for us to go to Alaska. And about a month later, we had a guy who ran a trucking company or a transportation company shipped all of our stuff up and back. So amazing how the Lord provides. Amazing how the Lord provides. Now we're finishing the tour. We've hit almost all the states. We're finishing up, and we get a chance to see the Lord's blessings. I get a call from a kid 2 years, almost to the day of when we were in Nashville, Tennessee. One of the highlights, at least for my kids, was when we were in Nashville, Tennessee, we got to live at one of Carrie Underwood's house. So that was really cool. She's married to an NHL hockey player, Mike Fisher, and they said, you can come stay in our cabin. And that was a really nice cabin. I've seen some cabins. That was not a cabin. But a couple years after that, I got a call from a kid that said, Rick, I just wanted to call you and thank you because I accepted Jesus at your clinic in Tennessee. And I just wanted to tell you how much of an impact now I'm serving here and now I'm tied in there. So often we don't know what's the impact of our obedience. Sometimes we get to find out. And that was one of the instances we got a chance to find out. So moving forward, we're going to be here in Alexandria at the new school, partnering with Brent and Tim and Keith and the rest of the leadership team. We met in 2014 and talked about the potential of FCA hockey bringing our headquarters here. And now here we are, another step of obedience for these men and many of you who are a part of that, taking that step of obedience and opening up the school. We've learned that it doesn't matter how many come because the Lord can take care of all the numbers, and he does. It's just being obedient. So we're going to finish up here. I know we're kind of running out of time quickly. Looking back, what did I learn? Mainly I learned that the Lord is faithful, that when he calls you, he provides for you. When he calls you, he provides, he equips, and he protects. He protects. I mean, other than that first issue with weather, we missed every major storm. We were never caught in one snowstorm. That was being in Boston, in Michigan, in Minnesota. It was amazing how the Lord protected us. Our van didn't break down at all until we finished the tour. Then it broke down 3 times. But it was amazing how he provided everything. The Lord controls everything, the weather, finances, everything. The Lord knows the true desires of our heart, and I talked about that in the VP story. And thirdly, it's all about being obedient to Him. So when we're obedient, it takes a sacrifice to be obedient, but it's sacrificing everything to be obedient. A full sacrifice, right? A full sacrifice in giving that. Now, if you pull out your card, we're going to finish this up in closing here. I'm going to ask this question to you. As I talked, maybe the Lord put something on your heart, how you can be obedient to Him. Is there something that He's asked you to give to Him, to give full obedience to Him that you've maybe withheld from? So I'll give you a couple of examples. And we're going to write on the back of this call, on the first part, it's our verse. The Lord demands our obedience over sacrifice. The second part is, how can you be obedient to His call? That might be a simple thing as sharing your love for Christ with your brother or your neighbor or your parents or your children, right? Sharing Him. It could be taking that mission trip that He's put on your heart that you've never had time for. It could be healing a broken relationship that you've had with somebody, right? Being obedient, the Lord's told you to do it, to go to that person and ask for forgiveness, but you've been too stubborn to do that. It could be adopting a child or becoming a foster parent, a major move in people's lives that He's called you to, but you've ignored it. Maybe being a volunteer coach, helping out with a team or a church or somewhere, right? How can you be obedient? Breaking a habit. I could talk to you about how the Lord convicted me for years to break a habit, a sinful habit. Right? And you can't be fully all in until you rid yourself of those and totally submit those to Him. And then lastly, renewing a relationship with Him. And most importantly, being obedient to His call. The Bible is full of the Lord calling people to follow Him. Drop your nets and come follow me. Give up everything to the rich young ruler and come follow me, right? So which one of these applies to you? If you just write that on your card, if you remember one thing today, it's how can you be more obedient to what the Lord has called you to do? And I believe He's called us all. So I think that's all that I have. If you have something that you'd like to pray with me about afterwards, or Tim or Pastor Jay, or anyone here, I'd love to stick around afterwards and share more of our story. We're here in town. We'd love to fellowship with any family, any couple, any single. I'll be at the school a lot of the days. Just feel free to drop by and love to get to know each and every one of you. But thank you for having me today. And really, we're blessed to be here and be a part of your awesome community. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you. And you know, when we started doing the North Star Christian Academy,